You know, this is, excuse me, a damn fine cup of coffee.
I don't need you to tell me how good my coffee is, okay?
Hello, and welcome to another damn fine cup of culture. This month, we've another in our occasional series, Second Chances, where we take another look at movies we initially hated, rejected, or just felt meh about. But since that initial reaction, we've had a nagging feeling that maybe we should give it another go. And that's what we do for these episodes. Joining me to rewatch and possibly reassess a film is Matt. Hello, Matt.
Hey, Alan. How are things?
Good. How are things with you?
Yeah, definitely okay. We've watched tons of films recently. I actually watched Jeanne Dielman for the first time, and it was surprisingly survivable, though. So, hang on. It's, 3 hours, 20 minutes. It was good. It was interesting, but perhaps not the ideal film to watch after a day at work.
No, definitely. And I think line up something short and cheery for afterwards,
is a
good little chaser to, if you watch it. But of all things Second Chances, let's just leap right into it. And Matt, why not tell us the film you picked and why?
Okay, the film I've picked for today, and it will make more sense even once we've talked about the second film or once we've revealed the second film, I would like to talk about Prometheus, the Ridley Scott 2012 Alien prequel, spin-off, whatever you want to call it. My main reason for wanting to give this one a second chance is basically this. Like so many people at the time, I didn't particularly like it when it came out. I was underwhelmed and some bits I actually really disliked. But in recent years, I think it's had something of a critical reassessment. Lots of critics, interesting, good critics, have watched it again and have said there's actually more there and there's better stuff there than perhaps they noticed at first. So I thought, well, why not? Perhaps, return to the film with also adjusted expectations, because I feel that very often expectations can lead to something of an unfair way of watching a film. And in this case, I thought it might be the case. I mean, what about you? I think you've said in the past that you don't dislike Prometheus. Is that correct?
Yeah, definitely. I remember seeing it in the cinema when it came out. And actually, I was quite positive about it.
Okay.
And I think the main thing really was that I enjoyed its sort of sense of scale. And also, and I'm using this word because I do think it's why I enjoy it, although it'll sound a bit controversial, I really enjoyed its wackiness.
Mm-hmm.
It is on one level a very silly film that kind of takes the silliness serious. And I think when I went to see it in the cinema, I was in the mood for that. And I enjoyed it a lot. I remember at the time it came out, it did get good reviews initially. A lot of the hype was reviews praising it. And then it very quickly seemed to have a bit of a backlash. So I remember giving it almost a second chance a couple of years later on the Blu-ray and actually still enjoyed it. I could understand an awful lot of the criticisms and where they were coming from about the film, but it was still sort of enjoyable science fiction film. So to some extent, watching it for this was almost giving it a third chance. And I kind of think maybe it was the time I enjoyed it the least on one level, which my theory is it probably comes from having seen Alien Covenant, which was a film I didn't enjoy. And so a lot of the original wackiness of this film has kind of been truncated by that film and put into a more established continuity and a more conventionally alien universe. And sort of knowing where it's going with a lot of this stuff, it felt slightly disappointing this time around, but I still enjoy it for its, like I said, for its wackiness.
I mean, I have to say that at the time, I definitely, when it was announced, and especially when the first trailer came out, I was very excited because the trailer kind of, it had this, it captured the atmosphere of Alien without seeming that it was copying it. So it felt like, we might be getting something that is very much in the Alien vein without just being a retread. I loved the highly evocative visuals in the trailer, and I thought the cast obviously was very interesting. Naomi Rapace has done good stuff. Michael Fassbender is usually very good. Charlize Theron, Idris Elba. I thought this has potential. This could be something really good. But I also had certain doubts because I would say that Alien is, it's one of my favorite films. It's one of the best films in its genre. It is just so amazingly well made and it holds up, many science fiction films that are 50 years old don't hold up necessarily to the same extent. They're dated. But Alien, with its retro future, even at the time, it feels like such a coherent, believable, tactile universe. And I thought, if the trailer already announces this as something that is, you know, stylistically, thematically, tonally connected to Alien, you can't not expect it to somehow live up to that. But at the same time, it's almost impossible for a film to live up to that. And I think there's two aspects here for me. You know, one thing is just plot-wise, having a story prequel, how often does a prequel actually fill in blanks that need to be filled in? And if not, what else does it do? So the question is really, what will the film add to Alien and what will it gain from that film? The other thing is, though, just the quality. You know, will it be as good as Alien in similar ways? So I went into the film with expectations that I knew myself would probably be unfair. But it didn't live up to my unfair expectations, and it didn't, I have to say, it didn't live up to my readjusted expectations. There is stuff there to like, but I think as a film, it's pretty incoherent and half-baked. It's the kind of film that I sometimes say, you know, I would like to frame it and hang it on a wall, as long as I don't have to listen to the dialogues and the plot and the characters.
I mean, that's very Ridley Scott with quite a few of his films. I think there is something about Ridley Scott that he is incredibly visual as a director, mm-hmm. and he still has that. He still has that capacity to make something absolutely striking in its visuals. He just has no judgment whatsoever when it comes to script.
Mm-hmm.
It's astonishing that he'll say in interviews how much he liked a script, and you watch the film and you're just, really? He's drawn to terrible scripts and then he's able to make them look beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And they had an advert in cinemas for an alcoholic drink a few years back that had been given to Ridley Scott. And he was told to visualize the flavors that went into this fancy liquor. And to be honest, that advert was one of the best things he's done in a while, because all it was a visual for each potential flavor, and each of them mm-hmm. was striking. I mean, it was pure sort of advertising, almost like extreme perfume advertising porn, basically, was what it was. But shorn from having to make sense, having to give us this sort of poor dialogue, I was just like, this looks great. Someone write a good script and force him to work from that, because he still got it. He still got an incredible visual style.
And I think in some ways he was lucky, or perhaps we, the audience, were lucky that a lot of his early films had really strong scripts. I think, you know, for instance, Alien just holds up as a script, you know, whether you watch it as a sci-fi slasher or as something more thematically deep. It holds up. The characters hold up. The plot holds up. I mean, obviously, it's not a complicated plot, but it does what it needs to do to tell that story. Blade Runner 2, I think Blade Runner is a bit looser, perhaps a bit sillier also in some respects, but it works in terms of being a kind of retro futuristic noir film. I think also The Duelists, I've only watched that one once, but I remember that it worked well. The characters were interesting. And I think all of that formed Ridley Scott's reputation to a large extent. Films that he crafted magnificently well with his collaborators, but they also hold up in terms of story and characters. And I would agree that that is something that in his films in the last 10, 15 years has just not been the case. I think even his good films very often are just not as interesting, not as coherent. And it's a shame, because he is fantastic at the visuals. He is fantastic at tone. One thing that I find quite difficult with Ridley Scott very often is that, you know, how he works with actors. It's when he's got a good script and good actors, all of this is pulled off fantastically. But I have read in interviews that he leaves his actors alone to some extent. He says he's the director. He gets good actors, so they do the acting job. He doesn't need to do it for them. And I think that shows especially with bad scripts, that his actors are often lost at sea when the material just doesn't quite make sense.
And I think actually I would say that in relation to that, another plus with Prometheus is I do think it's well cast. And every time I've come back to it, I'm sort of surprised by who's in it. It's quite an interesting collection. You sort of forget that, you know, Benedict Wong is in it. You forget that the main baddie from the last Mission Impossible film is in it. There's sort of a lot of people who have roles that are primarily just to die in this film. They're all people who are very talented. And I think that works, and it doesn't work for almost the reason you say. Everyone in this kind of has been able to create themselves quite an interesting if shallow character because they've given themselves the quirks. They've had the room to, with what little they've got, they've had to paint something interesting. But their purpose in this is just to die. And it sort of is, yeah, it kind of feels like, well, maybe that's not helping keep things tight, that maybe if things were, you were a little more on top of things, that would have worked. But I do quite like the sort of collection of characters we're introduced to at the beginning of this. And I think that sort of follows I think one of the reasons I'm quite positive about this film is, like you, I adore Alien. I think it is possibly one of the best films ever made. And due to that adoration, I've watched a lot of both Alien sequels and Alien ripoffs. And the one thing you get watching those is you end up watching a lot of terrible films. And they do a lot of things that are the standard of, let's introduce the people we're going to die. And they're just not that interesting. You sort of watch that and you go, God, I know these characters. I know which ones are going to survive. I know. And actually, Prometheus, possibly because the actors were just given a bit more freedom, they are a bit more interesting than the usual shallow crew. They have their quirks just give them that little bit, a little bit more. And that's also set alongside one of the real highlights in this film, which I think is Fassbender's David, who I think is a very interesting play on the sort of androids they have in the Alien universe. So yeah, it's interesting that I get a lot out of it because of that freedom, but I think I agree with you that ultimately it probably damages the film from being great.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I have to say that for me, most of the actors and characters don't quite work because they don't quite connect up. I think they are made up of quirks and ideas, but they never cohere into something. I mean, for instance, Elizabeth Shaw, the kind of female lead, the protagonist, she's definitely set up to be a Ripley-like character, but they also give her this religious faith. And that could be interesting, I guess, but they don't know what to do with it. They bring it up every now and then, again, as if the script thinks it has something to say about religious faith. The problem is it doesn't. It's like this is a script that thinks it has ideas and none of them hold up to any kind of thought much, especially the ones that I think are connected to Alien. I mean, to link up to what you said about David, I do think Michael Fassbender's David is the best thing about the film, apart from the visuals. And he is also a visual. I mean, he's very easy on the eye to begin with, but I think he's just an interesting actor. He does interesting stuff. And I think thematically, he's the only thing that kind of sort of holds up as this basically an android with a massive chip on his shoulder because he hates the ones who created him. And that is interesting. I mean, I honestly almost think that this could have worked better as a Blade Runner spin-off in terms of the relationship between artificial beings and their makers who abuse them to some extent. But that's not where the interest lies. To me, it's actually hurt by the connection to Alien to some extent. Because the thing is, Alien is so perfectly self-contained. The alien is so unexplained. It is just this thing from space that's out there to kill you, and it works as that. But the moment you try to explain it, the moment you try to say, oh, actually it came about because of this, and especially if you kind of say that, well, all of this happened because, you know, men meddled in what they weren't supposed to meddle in, it lessens the original Alien. So I wish we'd had an original sci-fi film with this kind of visual quality, with the David character, possibly even with the harebrained, you know, Erich von Däniken, Chariots of the Gods, silly bullshit that can still be fun in a trashy way, absolutely, but cut out the alien bits, because I think there's nothing in this film where I think the connection to Alien does Prometheus any favors. How about you? Do you think it benefits from the connection?
I mean, I do definitely live in the world where Alien is its own perfect thing, and let's just keep it, you know, distinct as this brilliant film. But I have always said that the one thing I feel is a bit of a shame about Aliens, which is a great film, is the bit where the aliens become bugs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost near the end of the film that's just made sort of explicit. There's a queen, she's laying eggs, that's what you're dealing with. You're just dealing with sort of quite nasty insects. And I've always thought that was a huge shame. And that, to some extent, derailed the franchise, because all the subsequent films are basically saying, you know, you're dealing with a bug. You're dealing with a pretty nasty bug, but ultimately that's what it is. And I do have a soft spot for this film digging into sort of, like you said, the pulp Chariot of the Gods nonsense to try and sort of slightly put the aliens as something else. It's this film suggests a lot. And I think thanks to basically the script's incoherence, you can actually say it doesn't tell us that much. You know, you can kind of try and work out what maybe's going on, but it's such a mess of a script that there's room to just go, look, we don't know what's going on. We don't, you know, the engineers may, yeah, they meddled with something they don't understand, but why was it too dangerous? Was there something darker and deeper that got sort of created by them? And I think there's room to sort of return the alien to something we don't understand, which has not been the case since the near the end of Aliens. And I do quite like it for that. And I think especially the period of the film, which is, I mean, I will say I find it incredibly entertaining, which is, you know, the crew are going to get slaughtered. And, you know, I like horror films. I like films where they're basically saying, that's what we're here to do. We've introduced you to these people. Hopefully you'll like a fair few of them. Now we're going to have fun killing them. And I think the way it adds this pulp science fiction epic nonsense, but then all it's really doing with it is the silliness of killing people. And there's something I enjoy about that. That sort of Chariot of the Gods, there's a pomposity to it that is only silly. I think if you actually really take it seriously and think that this film has something to say, I agree with you completely, has nothing to say. But I kind of like taking that pomposity, telling those grand ideas and using it to just kill people. I find that tremendously entertaining. And I think in the connection to Alien, and if we're sort of talking about, I think one of the successes of Alien is body horror. It does, I think, in the sort of the Liz Shaw sequence where she's trying to get rid of what she's been infected by. I think that sequence in the sort of machine to remove it is up there with the best of these science fiction films that play with that. It is original. It is horrible. I just sort of think that is probably the one moment in this film where it feels like truly this is like an alien film, that it plays with the idea of, you know, you're pregnant with the alien and you want to get rid of it. And look how that experience goes. It goes horrible. There's a very sort of Cronenberg touch to that moment that I enjoy tremendously. But I do think, and this is just going back to the weakness of the script, that you are picking out moments you enjoy because on the whole, it's a mess.
I see what you're saying. I've just never managed to enjoy it like that. I think mainly because the epicness to me almost comes across as this kind of fanfic lore masturbation thing that, you know, fans of certain franchises have, you know, where you fill a wiki with, you know, page upon page upon page of detail. And I think even though I like the aesthetic of Prometheus a lot, the monsters, other than in that sequence that you mentioned, lack the tactile quality that the original Giga Alien has, where it feels real. It feels like you can reach out and touch it, but you do not want to, you know, you definitely do not want to reach out and touch it, and you don't want to be touched by it. This one has a much more spindly CG aesthetic, which I think works as an aesthetic. As I said, I would love to frame this and hang it on a wall, but it doesn't quite, except in that one scene, have the same kind of tactility. And I think with the characters, my problem is really, I mean, this has become a bit of a meme and a lazy point to make, but the characters act really stupidly, which I don't mind in a horror film. Most of us, I think, would be stupid if faced with cosmic horror. But they act stupidly in a way that is not particularly interesting. You know, like, for instance, you've got a geologist, you've got a biologist, and they go out and pet the little CG snake. And yes, you can, I think you can almost, you know, probably switch to a kind of more camp mode. You know, you can laugh at it, but it's not a film that wants to be laughed at. I mean, it's a bit of a shame. You know, you've got Damon Lindelof as one of the scriptwriters, and he's done horrible things and he's done fantastic things. I think, for instance, The Leftovers and also the Watchmen series were really good. But he's someone, he's got thematic ambitions, and I wish the film didn't have those thematic ambitions. It would just jettison them. It would be more self-aware in basically deflating the Erich von Däniken hot air balloon, so to speak. Because, I mean, individual scenes are really well made, as you say. I think the scenes where basically people just run and scream, so to speak, are so much better than the ones where they talk. And that is something that it's easy to underestimate about the original Alien. I mean, these characters, they were not brilliant, you know, doctors of geology or biology or whatever. They were working stiffs. And in very few lines, Alien just kind of really draws them up so nicely, which combines fantastically with the performances. You know, the kind of conflict that you have between the guys below deck, basically who do the grunt work, and the ones who are basically higher up, get more money. The kind of critique of capitalism in a, you know, capitalism in space, which Alien does in a really subtle way without ever kind of rubbing your face in it, becoming preachy. And there's just nothing here to match that. There's silliness, absolutely. And I think once you can relax into that silliness, I can absolutely imagine that the film becomes more enjoyable. Because, I mean, there's scenes like, for instance, when the giant alien spaceship rolls towards Charlize Theron and she doesn't run left or right. She's just, you know, kind of squashed because she runs in a straight line. That works as comedy. It's just that the film doesn't know it's comedy.
Yeah, definitely. Which I think is part of the Chariot of the Gods vibe. I think they're now books and they're now theories that, you know, they are to be laughed at, I think, even though I think the Graham Hancocks of this world and the Erich von Danikens didn't realize that. I think that they think they're being serious, and I think there's a lot of fun to be had laughing at. And I definitely agree in terms of the presentation of the characters that it's one thing that I notice with so many alien ripoffs. And this is sometimes, I think, when you're dealing with the horror genre as well, is there comes a point where their view is, well, we can't have the characters behave completely realistically because then it'll spoil the film.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, if you really were in this situation, people would break down, they'd panic. So actually, we're going to have something terrible happen. And then 5 minutes later, we're going to present them as quite relaxed before the next attack. And it's absurd. It doesn't make sense. And I think the genius of Alien, and also I think it goes with Aliens, is at no point do I doubt the credibility of what everyone's doing.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone is relaxed when you think, actually, I credibly believe the danger is over. And then when the danger comes back, they are a mess. They are struggling. They are panicking. They are making bad decisions. And that, I think, is really effective at creating the horror. And I think the moment where you cross over to say, well, we're making a fun horror film, we're going to be killing these people off, so let's just have one of them wander off for no good reason, and they're going to be slaughtered. And I do think it's a shame that Prometheus ultimately is the latter type of film, that it has to sort of make the people sufficiently stupid so it can keep a story going that they're being killed off sort of one by one. And it doesn't have a moment, which you'd probably expect, I think, about 40, 45 minutes in, where they realise that everything has gone to hell and actually they should behave seriously and normal and treat the problem seriously. At that point, the film then goes, no, we're going to go down another path, which is the fun of horror, the aliens going to get you, and all these different ideas flying around. And I mean, there's an element of fun in that, but it definitely makes it a weaker film, especially when compared to Alien.
Kind of makes you actually wonder, because, I mean, we've talked about the Alien films before, and I think back then we touched upon Alien 4, Alien Resurrection a bit, but we stayed away from it mostly. I think Alien Resurrection is not a good film, but for me, it has a sense of camp fun. You know, this kind of French bon dessiné thing, which can be over the top, which doesn't have to be coherent, because it's just throwing ideas at you. In some ways, I almost think that kind of sensitivity could have benefited this story. You know, more tongue-in-cheek satire of exactly the Chariots of the Gods rubbish. But I don't think that that would have worked with Ridley Scott's sensitivities, because I think, while I don't think he understands this material at times, I'm sorry, but I really don't think he does, he takes it seriously. He's not someone who's tongue-in-cheek. He's definitely not someone who's camp. And at his best, that works brilliantly. But I think it's one of the reasons why, let's say, his successes with not very good scripts are mixed, to say the least. Because he doesn't strike me as a very self-aware director. He's very good, but I think very often it's very instinctive way of directing. It's when you listen to him also on commentary tracks and making offs, he doesn't come across as someone who thinks deeply about what he does and then takes the intellectual route, which he doesn't have to, because when it works brilliantly. But I think you made it the comparison to Ridley Scott with David Fincher in Your Last Second Chances, ironically enough. Mm. And I think Fincher, while they have similar strengths and weaknesses, Fincher is someone who thinks more about his material and his characters and how to do that. Not always to perfect use. I don't think that Benjamin Button was saved by Fincher being a more intellectual director. But I think that is the difference. Ridley Scott is very much a gut-feeling director, I feel. And when it works, it's perfect.
I mean, this was sort of giving the film a second chance. Did rewatching it, did it change anything you felt about the film? Or did it sort of reinforce where you were beforehand?
I think it reinforced it. And I was hoping that I would be better able to enjoy the film on its own merits, because I knew I no longer had the expectations of this has to live up to Alien in any way. Yeah, no, I think, having given it a second chance, I don't think I will be giving it a third chance. And also, I'm definitely not going to be very sad if that particular strand of Alien stories isn't continued. I think I liked Alien Covenant a bit better than you, but I think also because that one is less, it's less ambitious, it's less wild, it is more conventional, but I think because of that, certain things work a bit better. But at the same time, it's a sequel to a prequel where you definitely ask yourself, why continue here? We've had this before and we've had it better.
Definitely. I mean, I did not enjoy Alien Covenant, and I definitely missed the madness of Prometheus, which made me realize how much that madness and wackiness is a saving grace for me with Prometheus, to take it out and I lose what interest I have. And I do find it interesting that I have no regrets that they've stopped. I don't have a desire to see a third film that apparently would connect it all up to Alien, that they had the plan that this would, you know, I don't have any desire to see that. I don't see how it would be that interesting. I think it would just, like, almost like you said, it would have a sort of wiki quality of, like, well, can fill it in, and it connects things for the sake of connecting things. And I have no desire for that. And I mean, the one plus, I think, with Alien Covenant is it ends on such a horrible, horrible downer.
Yeah.
And you're sort of left with, like, that's the future for, and that's quite fun. But yeah, it's interesting that the fact that they sort of subsequently said, we're not going anywhere with this and it isn't going to happen, I'm quite relaxed about.
Yeah, I mean, really the only thing I would salvage from those films in the end is an android called David, I think. But talking about androids called David, I hear that you've also brought a film along, right?
Yes, that was seamless, Matt. That was excellent. I couldn't have planned it better than that. Yeah, no, so the film I picked for Second Chances was AI Artificial Intelligence, the Steven Spielberg film basically building on what Kubrick had left him. And I think, you know, one of the reasons for picking this, I think the main reason, was related to our trip last year to see the Stanley Kubrick archive, which is sort of mentioned in an earlier podcast. And one of the things we sort of looked at when we were there is a lot of the earlier scripts, the earlier drafts of this project, and how they were trying to sort of shape the film. And it was quite interesting reading those. It was quite interesting seeing the comments about those. And it made me realize that I hadn't seen this film in a long time. I saw this in the cinema when it came out, and I was disappointed, but I wasn't angry about the film. It was sort of a quite glad to have seen it, not too bothered to watch it again soon kind of reaction. And so I realized I hadn't seen it in such a long period of time. Now would be a good time to give it another go. Especially, I think the impression that we both got from the Stanley Kubrick archive is the production felt quite confused. I think you could tell from the scripts, you can tell from the different rewrites, that it really wasn't clear what they wanted to make. And I appreciate we only saw a sample of it, but it was interesting reading multiple different endings, multiple endings that really seemed quite different in how they felt, and quite different in, you know, the big way the story ended was rewritten quite. The details were the same, but what actually happened at the end could be quite different. And you couldn't understand why on one level it would go one way or one way it would go another. I couldn't fathom you know, what are you trying to achieve with this? And that sort of made me think, you know, I want to watch the film. I want to see what I'd forgotten what ending Spielberg went with, and I wanted to see if it made sense in the context of a film. And I think, I mean, my sort of feeling with this, which I think echoes what we were saying about Prometheus, is this again feels like a film of set pieces that isn't coherent.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a feeling that that's what this film was always doomed to be, even if Kubrick had made it. That it follows a lot of what we sort of read in the pre-production that felt fragmentary. This film still feels fragmentary. And I think that's still its flaw. It's fundamentally flawed because of that. And I, again, had a very similar reaction. I enjoyed watching it. I took out the bits I liked from it. But in the end, it was very much a bit of a shrug that this isn't a great film. I mean, how did you feel about it?
I have to say that, like you said, for me, it was also very similar to rewatching Prometheus. I come at it from the other direction. I get the impression that you kind of said, what you're saying is roughly, you liked it for the things that worked and you were able to not ignore, but accept the things that didn't work. With me, it's much more that the things that don't work for me ruin the film for me. And then there are things that I see that do work, but because of the rest, they can't function. I do think it's extremely bitty. It's even more incoherent than Prometheus. Again, there are themes there. It wants to be a thematic film. It wants to have something to say, but I think very little of it adds up. And especially for me, it's even when I think I understand what Spielberg is doing or what the script is doing, it doesn't work for me on an emotional level. And I think with Spielberg, that is basically that's the killing touch. Because for me, Spielberg and Kubrick, they're both extreme. Kubrick was fantastic at his kind of thing, but he was a director who, you know, you don't have to engage emotionally. And to some extent, it's even a benefit if you don't engage emotionally. You don't watch Dr. Strangelove and care about the characters. There's always a remove there, and that remove works for Kubrick. Spielberg is the opposite. I think he is a director that more than any other director I know wears his heart on his sleeve. He's an extremely earnest director, and I think he's best when he's earnest. You know, that kind of Spielbergian sentimentality that people sometimes criticize. Again, when it works brilliantly. Take something like E.T., you may like it or not, but he knows exactly how to play those notes. He knows exactly how to play those chords, and there's no one better than Spielberg at playing those particular notes. The problem is, AI is not E.T. AI is not Jurassic Park. It's something that I think is more of a thought piece, and as such, it requires a distance from the material that I don't think Spielberg does or does well. I think, you know, there are moments there which very much feel like Spielberg is trying to do to be Spielberg. I mean, what else would it be? Especially the ending, you know, where the way it's filmed, the way it's acted, the way John Williams' soundtrack, you know, swells. It feels like it's Spielberg trying to make you feel a certain way. And I think that's something that Spielberg, again, does well. He's not someone who leaves you to make up on your own how to feel about his films and characters and stories. He tells you how to feel, but then he makes you, he plays you like an orchestra. And that is not something that works with this story, and it's not something that works for me with this film. It's when I felt I knew how the film wanted me to feel, I just didn't feel like that.
Yeah.
And there were other times when I felt completely at a loss, but not in an interesting, ambiguous way, but just in a vague, messy way.
And I think it's interesting looking at this, like if you just look at it as a Spielberg film, that I sort of mentioned that I find it very bitty. But also it has sequences that seem to belong to different genres.
Mm-hmm.
And almost not genres I think that Spielberg does well. So I think the sort of early bit where David is sort of introduced to the mother and the mother's finding it quite difficult, there's an element to that feels like it could be unsettling horror, but I don't think Spielberg can direct that.
Mm.
I think he likes families too much that he can't commit to something that's truly unsettling at that point. And you're looking at something where this is a mother that's going to abandon this child. Like, you've got to lay the groundwork for why she would do this. And instead, I think he just cannot let go of this is families playing. That there's something. I think he wants it to be both slightly scary, but also heartwarming, and it doesn't quite manage either. And I think another disappointment, and this is sort of purely from the Spielberg angle, is I think some of the visual set pieces that you'd think he could do, especially given Jurassic Park just a few years earlier, which I think is an incredibly good film, is there's just bad visual storytelling and sequences that you think this should be entertaining that are so pedestrian. And the two that really struck out was, I think, when you have the sort of Flesh Fair riot and David escapes the riot, it's the most underwhelming moment in the film. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't really make any sense because you have this big sort of almost confrontation that these people like tearing apart robots, but suddenly confronted with something that just looks like a boy, they rebel against the whole system, tear onto the stage and start smashing everything up. And then David basically walks away. You know, surely the crowd would be interested in David. Surely there would be these repercussions, or there could be an action set piece where David has to use his wits to escape them, which feels like something that Spielberg would be incredible at. And instead, that just doesn't happen. And later, David rescues Joe from the police. It's such a pedestrian sequence that should involve these sort of, you know, futuristic helicopters, and he's breaking someone out of captivity, and it just looks dull and bland. And you want Spielberg to make the most of the exciting set piece, even if it's got nothing to do with the plot, even if it exists just to be, you know, the giant ball chasing Indiana down somewhere. You know, he does this brilliantly well, and there are opportunities to do it in this film, and they're really badly done. It was sort of that, I think, is sort of one of the biggest shocks about the film. And just another thing I really sort of felt, which was interesting having looked at the archive and how much effort across both this and 2001 in predicting the future, is this already feels like such a dated vision of the future. It was almost feeling quite funny when we got to the Flesh Fair, and the band playing at the Flesh Fair could not have felt more the year 2000. They couldn't have designed something to be more dated. It really had this sort of fundamental failure of vision to sort of think so far ahead and go, well, what will things be like? And I think that's compounded with the sequence where they go to see Dr. No.
Ooh, yeah.
And that's basically the internet. And they have to basically hype up the internet as this amazing thing that you go into this place that you can talk to. And you just think, well, surely everyone can ask questions about where to find something. You know, that's the internet. And instead you have this bizarre sequence that probably felt realistically futuristic when Kubrick started working on this in like the 70s and 80s, that you could go somewhere that was connected to everything and pull all the data together and give you an answer. That, but already by the time this film was made, that sequence looks absurd, just as sort of science fiction as prediction. It doesn't make any sense, and there's a lot in this film that just feels jarring for that reason. It doesn't feel like sci-fi. It's not playing in that sort of area of trying to show us something, trying to sort of predict something. And therefore, what it's trying to say just doesn't have any meaning.
Yeah. I mean, in that respect, that whole sequence with the Flesh Fair, for instance, it made me think of Strange Days. When was that made? I think 1999, the Catherine Bigelow.
Yeah, around the same time.
And
yeah,
that is a film that also, it's futurist dated, but at the same time, that works for me because it's not about the future. It's not about what's going to happen 20 years down the road. It's about what's already happening. So the future can look like the present. AI doesn't have that benefit because it wants to be about something futuristic. And I think it's kind of okay when it then in its epilogue goes into the far future because there's no connection to the present day. But the rest of it, I mean, the Flesh Fair and what happens around there. When I watched that, I thought this looks like a straight-to-video sci-fi film by some kind of no name that you might catch, you know, when you're drunk or hungover and you want to watch some trash. There's some ideas here that are fun. I think the android designs are fun. Some of the ideas there are cool, but it also kind of rubs your face in what it's trying to say. You know, all these hillbilly characters that will probably then vote Trump a couple of years later. It's just, there's no subtlety there. And at the same time, its satire is blunt because it doesn't really say anything much about anything, which is a shame.
Yeah, and I was just saying, you sort of talked about Blade Runner fitting David, and I think there's a very Blade Runner character in this, in Joe. I think rewatching it this time, when sort of Joe is introduced into the film, and you have basically this sex robot, that suddenly seemed quite interesting, and that it had the potential to go somewhere, and then it doesn't really go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But that felt like something that you could tell an interesting film about, and almost that he probably should have been the central protagonist, that, you know, it almost starts with him, and maybe he comes across a boy who's run away from home. But I think there is something more interesting as an idea there that can be explored, but again, probably explored better in a Blade Runner film that suits that universe. It doesn't really suit the universe that we've got here. And then, of course, you sort of get interested in the Joe character, and then it's sort of pretty much abandoned. It sort of drops out the story, and it just, again, feels like episodic. It's the, well, what was the point of that character? It doesn't really go anywhere. It doesn't have anything to sort of say, really. It's quite entertaining for a bit, and then it just stops being entertaining, and it disappears from the film.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. But I mean, the episodic thing, I think it could have still worked, because I think what it's trying to go for is, I mean, even though it has the Pinocchio link, it highlights that all the time to almost to nausea, but structurally it actually reminds me of something like The Wizard of Oz, which, you know, it can work. You know, you can have the weird bit there, you can have the set piece there, but that requires a central character that works. And I have to say, for me, David is the main problem. Where David is the saving grace in Prometheus, for me, David in AI is very much the weak link. We both talked about Blade Runner, and I think in Blade Runner that manages the trick of having android characters that are strange. I mean, Rutger Hauer is weird as hell in that film, but at the same time, you buy him on an emotional level. Let me ask you, in AI, did you relate to David emotionally? Did he make you feel anything?
No. Which, again, I think comes back to why I think the film almost should have focused on Joe. Because there's something almost fundamentally creepy about David.
Mm-hmm.
That if Joe encountered this droid that looked just like a boy, and due to the sort of curse of his programming, he wanted his mummy, then you would have been detached and you could have seen all this sort of unsettling ideas. But by focusing on David, it doesn't really explore it. It just presents this stuff in quite a bland way. And yeah, I never felt sort of interested in his story. Or I always reference, there's sort of quite the famous quote that George Lucas said when he was told that his movies weren't emotionally engaging. And he said, you can easily emotionally engage someone in a film, just strangle a kitten on screen. And there are moments sometimes when you're watching a film that I do feel like, well, you're just strangling a kitten. You're doing this so deliberately to get an emotional reaction rather than me being really caught up by a story that I'm reacting to. And there's moments in this, I think, especially with like David's abandonment by the family, that it just felt like you are wanting me to get an emotional reaction. Oh, look, the poor little kid is being abandoned. I just didn't care. I really didn't. You know, and it has all the tricks that says, isn't this sad? Isn't this sad? Look, we're showing you something emotional and terrible. And I just wasn't engaged with it at all.
Mm-hmm. I think I've actually read essays that kind of suggest that that's very much on purpose, that we're not supposed to take David as a character that feels actual emotions. The problem with that is, that's not how the film works. The entire epilogue, if David isn't supposed to be taken seriously on an emotional level, the epilogue becomes pointless. Mm. But for me, it's really from the beginning, because Spielberg is so close to him, and because he pushes his Spielbergian sentimentality so much, it felt, as you say, you know, basically, it felt blatantly manipulative in a way that turned me against the character and the story that was being told. It felt like I was watching a Tamagotchi, perhaps, you know, a sophisticated program that basically has line 10, love mummy, line 20, go to 10. And yes, the surface appearance may be believable, but the film pushes that so much with the John Williams soundtrack, with the kind of Vaseline-y visuals that we're supposed to feel about this character like we might feel about E.T., but it doesn't give us a reason to. It doesn't give us space also to have a different opinion, you know? I think that's where, for instance, Kubrick, with the same material, he would have not told us how to feel about David. And by not telling us, we might have arrived at the point that Spielberg pushes to such an extent that I react against it. I mean, I'm thinking about later films that tell stories about artificial life, like Spike Jonze's Her or Alex Garland's Ex Machina. Both of those films leave us to doubt, how do we relate to these characters emotionally? Are they characters, you know, the AI in Her or the android in Ex Machina, are they characters that feel emotions like we do, that we would recognize? Perhaps they do, perhaps they don't. There's an uncanny valley element there. But at the same time, I think we end up at a point where we at least accept them as characters, as unfathomable characters. But I think that is to the benefit of the story being told. Whereas with David, we are being told in every scene of the film, you know, 10, love David, 20, go to 10. And that feels cloying. That feels more cloying than Spielberg does in other films where you don't have that ambiguity about a main character.
No, I agree with that entirely. And I think there's something that's missing at the heart of this film because of it. That I think those are two good examples of films where watching the film, the way the artificial intelligence behaves as the audience, you can't help but start subscribing human attributes to them. Because they're behaving in a human way. And to some extent, that's how we watch a film. That suddenly, you know, it is ambiguous what in Ex Machina, whether there was ever any intelligence behind the, or whether the whole thing was just a program cleverly working out a way to fulfill what it's been programmed to do. And AI never tries that. It never sets us up to go, what is David like? What is there at the heart of David? Is there anything real at the heart of it? Or is there something interesting to say about if he isn't real? It never explores that. And that's a sort of real shame. And as like you said, especially compared to later films that I think really sort of mine this in interesting ways.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this is just something that popped into my head right now, which is rather weird. But you know, the last year's one of the two films with sad donkeys, Eeyore, which I think does a very good job of making you feel for the donkey character without humanizing it, without anthropomorphizing it. I think AI would almost have needed something like that. Make us feel that David is something strange, something alien, but still something capable of emotion and worthy of our empathy, rather than just telling us, 10, love David, 20, go to 10.
Yeah.
Either do that, or then I think most of the stories that we've talked about, so Ex Machina, Her, even Blade Runner, arguably, although there's probably another episode in discussing that, we are given human characters that relate to the android characters, and to some extent our access to them is seeing characters that are human, recognizably human, relate to the androids. So we neither get the ambiguity that would make us form our own opinion about David, nor do we get other characters through which we perceive these androids. And the thing is, I think most interesting fiction about artificial life is at least to some extent about human beings and what does artificial life say about us. And that is also there in AI, but it's not there enough because in the end, the film spent so much time just with David. And yeah, either you buy into David and you care about him and then the film might work, or you don't. And then there's a lot there that just falls flat.
I was also wondering, just to winding up the AI discussion, to sort of go to sort of the heart of what a lot of the initial reaction to this film when it came out revolved around, is the final sequence, is the part of this film where we travel to the far future with David and he's awoken by seemingly super advanced computers. And I think, you know, I sort of alluded to it earlier, what was so interesting looking at the sort of scripts is this bit kept changing. So they would have the idea that, you know, they can recreate his mother from hair, but she only lasts a day. And then the ending was actually that she lasted more for a day and no one could understand why that happened. Or there was an ending that they just had a day and then it ended with the next day she was gone. And you had, you know, real sort of, it just went back and forth with no real consideration as to what are you trying to do with this bit. And I think it's interesting rewatching it is that this is the bit that I think lots of people when it came out said, oh, this is just pure Spielberg. Like the film should have ended, Kubrick would have ended the film with the child in the bottom of the ocean in the ice, and Kubrick would have ended on a downer. And it's clear from the notes that that was never the intention. You know, Kubrick had this far future final segment of the film. And I think it's interesting that, like, this is, in the weirdest way, this is, for me, probably slightly more successful than a lot of a film, because it is playing in an area Spielberg can play with a sentimentality. So that, you know, you have the idea that the mother's reawoken. And I think it is quite clever that it leaves it quite ambiguous at the end. That I think Spielberg's point is, however this plays out, it was enough that the mother and boy had some time together. That's an end in itself that sort of justifies, you know, you don't have to, it doesn't have to end happily afterwards. It doesn't have to go on forever. Just have this moment is enough. And it kind of leaves it at that, which I thought was quite interesting, which I thought felt very, very Spielberg. It's the only bit of the film that I think feels like its own thing, that has a sort of atmosphere and feeling that isn't found in other films. And I can partly understand why it isn't found in other films. It is quite odd, but it does give the film a uniqueness. And also, I think, I mean, we've touched upon it before, but I think really striking rewatching this is, I think this is a very bad John Williams score. I think it is very weak. I think it suffers from the film not quite knowing what type of film it is. So he doesn't quite know how to score it. And it doesn't quite work because of that. It always feels like slightly intrusive, ill-fitting music in a lot of occasions. And then at the end, you sort of feel, oh, we're back. I know this ground. It's Spielberg being very sentimental. I can do this now. It feels a lot more comfortable at that point. And I just wondered, because I had a soft spot for this when I first saw it. And I still have a bit of a soft spot for the mad ending. How do you feel about it?
I have to say, yeah, again, for me, a bit like with Prometheus, it feels like the film wants me to feel a certain way. Namely, this is kind of beautiful and sad and tragic. And because it tries to make me feel those things and doesn't give me the space to feel something else, I resent it. It gives me this kind of sour feeling. Now, I've read stuff or seen stuff that interprets this much more bitterly ironic, if not even cynical, that the point of all of this is that it is all artificial emotion, that basically it pushes the sentimentality so much because it is fake, because it is phony. Doesn't work for me, because it still leaves me with this sour feeling, because then it's basically just machines talking to machines about machine stuff. Who cares? I think what it lacks for me is really a distance, again, as I said, that Kubrick would have had, and a strangeness, you know, rather than the Spielberg, Williams, Ben Kingsley and Meryl Streep voices lulling me into the sad beauty of it all. Have something that is actually a bit more like the end of 2001, you know, where Dave Bauman wakes up in this hotel room, where you also don't quite know, what does this mean? What does it mean for him? He doesn't know what it means for him. I would have liked a film that leaves me a lot more, you know, not understanding what I've watched and what it means much more than it does. And I think Spielberg does not do that, or he doesn't do it well. As I said, I think Spielberg is best when he plays the audience like an orchestra. And as an orchestra member, you go along with that when he does it well. And here, Spielberg doesn't know what tune he's playing. And because of that, I feel like I'm being misused as the orchestra.
And I think what he can't do is, I think I agree, what this sort of sequence would really benefit from is a sort of lack of explanation and to leave the audience unsettled. You know, they are unsure. I think Spielberg is very good at, like, going, I'm going to give you the highs, I'm going to give you the lows. But like you said, he's playing you. He knows what emotions you are going to have at this point. And actually, this is the part of the story that would benefit from us not knowing how to feel emotionally. And even on a really sort of basic level, I rewatched the recent Blade Runner sequel, and you have the character has this AI wife in there. And by the end of it, you still don't know whether she was real in anything she said or whether that was the pre-programming. And I think the film sort of settles slightly on saying this is just how they behave. And that's just a secondary character that doesn't have much screen time, and it still has enough room to unsettle you and make you feel like you're not quite sure. And that is what this sequence should have done. And I think it's a real shame that it doesn't. Like you said, he wants the crowbar how you feel into it, and it weakens the material quite a lot, especially its artificial intelligence. You know, as a species, we don't understand that fully. We don't know whether computers will ever actually feel. And because we don't know, this is an interesting thing to explore and an interesting thing for science fiction to really go for. And it's almost like that's just not really in this film at all.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that's a good point about the Blade Runner sequel, that to some extent it out-AIs AI in a much shorter way. I mean, it's like a vignette. It's part of the entire film, but it does it better because Villeneuve doesn't tell you, think this, feel this, and I'm going to make you feel it as good as possible. He basically gives you the space, and without that space, yeah, I think there's interesting stuff in AI. There are interesting scenes. There's, when Spielberg leans into the weirdness, there's some shots, for instance, you know, completely wordless shots where there's this one scene early on where David kind of stands or kneels on the ground next to his real mummy, and his face is half reflected in some kind of tabletop, and it just makes him look strange and uncanny. I wish that really he had leaned into that uncanniness and accepted that as, you know, for us, David will always remain uncanny, but we can wonder, and that wonder would be interesting. The certainty that he feels he's turned into a real boy is not that interesting.
And I think, you know, just going back, I think it would almost have helped to have had someone else in the film reacting to it. Someone else in the film who to some extent is unsure of that question, and have a road, like I said, I sort of refer back to Joe, but have the two of them traveling, that he could be experiencing this and he could come to an end and like, he doesn't know. But I think without that, Spielberg then ultimately just defaults to, it's a cute kid, I'm going to make everyone care about the cute kid. And it's just not what the material, what the material requires, I think.
Mm, absolutely.
So I think that's a good look at two androids called David in terms of second chances. I will say this, actually, it has made me, I am going to be up for a second chance on Alien Covenant just to see whether it's as bad as I thought. And are there any other films that this sort of inspires you to rewatch?
Strangely enough, I think it makes me want to rewatch an episode of Black Mirror. I think it's a second season episode with Donald Gleason, where basically he plays a husband who dies in an accident, and then some company basically recreates from snippets on the internet, from photos, from emails, recreates a version of him, which I think is a much more, how should I say this, a version of an AI recreation of a human being that is much more believable these days. And I remember that episode being much more about, what does that do to us human beings? Something that looks like the person we loved, something that behaves like the person we loved, but we know it's all just a clever imitation. Or is it? So I think I might go and revisit that one.
Yeah. I'm sorry, is he called David in that, or are we going to have to break the rule for this?
He should be. Yeah. He probably isn't, but he should. Is Domhnall some kind of Gaelic version of David?
No, but I really enjoyed looking at these films and giving them a second chance, even if I think basically the rewatch sort of didn't really move the needle much with either of these films for both of us. I think I generally was like, oh, they're okay, they're fun, but there's not too much there. And I think it sort of reinforced the reasons why you didn't like them. Would that be fair?
Yeah, absolutely. Sorry to say. Though I still like the format and I like the idea of revisiting these things.
Yeah, definitely. And I think these are occasional, so we'll program in something further down the line and dig up another couple of films from the archive and give them another chance. But until then, we'll see you all next time on A Damn Fine Cup of Culture.